Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Let's get this done right off the bat. It's goo time, legal goo that is. The opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Remember this, Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely different and separate entity from websleuth.com LLC and forumsforjustice.org. So if you get your true crime brains boiling mad, don't blame the forums. Come to me, and we'll lower your temperature, I promise. Tonight, I have my unofficial official co-host, Michael in Minnesota, joining us. Also, Kathy from CourtChatter.com. And we welcome back our wonderful, dear friend, Cheryl McCollum from Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. And finally, we have VL Pate from her, I don't know what to call her because I know her real name and I keep wanting to say it, from her website, www.renewsit.com. And ladies, I'm going to ask you, if I don't introduce you and go to you for a question and you want to talk, just say your name first, because everybody always says, everyone sounds exactly the same. I don't think so, but, you know, that's the audience. We must keep them happy. Tonight we have two topics, George Zimmerman and Michael Skakel. George Zimmerman, what the hell can we say about this guy? Now, people think I defend him or that I like him. I don't. I don't like him. I don't defend him. He creeps me out. And I do think it's only a matter of time before he shoots his gun again, and hopefully when he does do this, it won't kill anyone this time. The only thing about Zimmerman that bothered me were the lies being told about what happened in the Trayvon Martin case. Whether you like George or not, the truth is the truth, and you got to stick with it, and that's what bothered me. I mean, the case was bad enough with Trayvon Martin, but you just don't allow the media to spin the story into something that it's not. That's where I stood on the Trayvon Martin case. I've always believed that since Zimmerman had the gun, he had the upper hand, and he is ultimately responsible for Trayvon's death. I think he is a gun-happy nutwad who will keep pulling out his gun because he has to show he is a big man. And you know what they say about a man obsessed with big guns? It's because they have little minds. What were you thinking? Anyway, welcome back our wonderful dear friend Cheryl McCollum. Cheryl, how are you?
I am fabulous, honey. How are you?
I am great. Let me introduce you to a few people here, Cheryl. Cheryl, we have my good friend VL Pate from her website, renewsit.com. Vicky, are you... I've just got to call you Vicky. I'm sorry. Are you there?
Go ahead.
Are you there, Vicky?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Say hello to Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl.
How are you?
Good.
And then we have Kathy from Court Chatter. Kathy, are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
And then we have Michael from Minnesota. He was my official co-host last week, and I think I've demoted him to unofficial official co-host. We'll see if he can earn his way back up the ladder. Michael, I hope you get feeling better, dear. I know you might not be able to stay the whole time, but whatever you can stay, we would appreciate greatly, okay?
Well, thank you, and I've got to say hello, my friend Cheryl. You're part of the reason I'm here tonight. I couldn't stand the thought of missing you, so... Hello, it's nice to
be with
you again.
Well, I appreciate that more than you know, Cheryl.
I love you. And I want to just start by making a comment, if I may, about the Zimmerman thing, Tricia.
Yes, please
I
do.
Like you. I defend the decision made by the jury in the Trayvon Martin case only because of the evidence that I saw in the trial. But let me tell you, I am so sick of George Zimmerman, and I in no way feel in any way good about his behavior since the trial, and I'm actually quite appalled, and I do believe it's just a matter of time before he does something that's going to land him in serious trouble if he hasn't already gotten there with this last incident. But I just want to make that clear. I don't think the jury could have convicted him given the evidence, but his behavior since is reprehensible, and I am not a fan of George Zimmerman, so I just want to lay that out there.
Amen. I agree with you 100%. And Cheryl, let's go to you. Now, last summer, you came on our show every single night to talk with us while George Zimmerman was on trial. And I think almost every night, Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, you said he's going to do it again. He's going to commit a felony. And look, here is what we have. Sure. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I've said 1,000 times in my career, if I'm right, it's not good news. So it's not like I get any joy about being right, but I did believe that they were basically making him feel bulletproof. I said that on your show, Nancy's show, After Dark. And the problem is you're going to have some patrol officers who are not going to want to get him for speeding. They are not going to want the hassle, frankly. And then you're going to have some other groups that are gun groups and you know, Second Amendment type groups that put him on a pedestal of some sort and want to give him a free gun and want him to come and sign posters. He enjoyed that celebrity, and that is also very dangerous because the reason he became famous is because he killed someone. Whether he did that legally or not, most people would not want to be known for that. And you know, my issue with him has been the same, that if he did something legally and then he got famous, then he was going to feel like he could go and kind of do as he pleased. My other issue is with the female. Who in their right mind, Tricia, meets John Zimmerman and says, yeah, that's the kind of guy I want. That's who I want to date. Somebody that's got a domestic violence past, somebody that's got mental issues in their past, someone that has been under death threats and hate, you know, filled websites and everything else, this is the person you decide you want to date. So there can't be any real shock that he has, you know, violence issues towards you.
Exactly. And VL Pate from RenewsIt.com, you were going to jump in. Now, VL, you have covered this story from the very beginning. You were one of the first people that said, hey, look, it's not what the media is telling you about the Trayvon case. Not that you're a fan of George Zimmerman. I believe you're more of a fan of the truth. And I know you were starting to interrupt there, and I'll let that pass. Normally, I slap people that interrupt, but because you're new, I will let it pass. So can I call you by your first name? What can I call you? It's driving me crazy.
Well, you can call me Vicky, but I didn't try to interrupt. I had you on mute until you started talking to me.
Oh, I didn't. Well, okay. I thought maybe it was just my drugs kicking in that I have to take right before the show, you know, my heavy-duty ones. Anyway, Vicky, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's not my thought. I don't watch any of the news coverage of this, ever. I haven't watched the news, actually turned on my television and watched the news since before the trial started. So all of the things that I hear, I can imagine that a lot of it's coming from people not having time to do what I do, which is I look at documents, I research the people in the cases. And as far as what Cheryl was saying about what kind of woman, the kind of woman that would do that, and I don't know if this was in the news reports or not, is the kind of woman who, coupled with her mother, would for 3 weeks shop national news, the national news to sell their story about George.
That's
who
right.
6 weeks ago, told George's family and George that she was pregnant. And then on the day that they had their argument, she told him she just wanted, this was 4 days after the last national media outlet told her they were not going to buy her story, and she said she wasn't going to tell it unless somebody paid what she wanted for it. 4 days later, she tells George, she just says that she wants to raise the baby by herself and that he needed to leave. So he was packing up his stuff to leave, and I don't know what happened because I wasn't there at that point, but to say, he said part of what he was packing up were his guns. Of course, she also has guns, and then she said that he cocked a shotgun and banged it on the table and broke up a glass table, which I find absurd. Anyway, then she called 911 at some point. There was no as far as domestic violence, I don't know about the gun. She told the police that it was for a second that she thought he lifted it. She told 911 he pointed it at her head, which is not an official police report. And then when she was calling 911, she was going towards her door, and he moved her out of the door so he could barricade it because, and I only know this from talking to someone in the family, but because she couldn't then say he was doing anything else if she was outside and he was inside. So this woman, he showed back up in his life right, I think, at the point where Shelley Zimmerman was going on national TV saying she was divorcing him and the other things she said about him. Then Shelley Zimmerman served his divorce papers, a divorce she had filed for 2 months ago. She served him while he's in jail. And these two women are friends, according to Shelley Zimmerman.
Let me interrupt 1 second, because you're making a lot, you're stating a lot of things as fact that I have never heard before. And you say you're getting... where are you getting it, and how can people find out these same things?
I can send you my website that's got the sources as to how that broke about the shopping the news. I'm surprised this wasn't on the news. I'm not really surprised because they like to demonize George Zimmerman.
I read it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It was a reporter that had been talking to the mother. Her name is Hope. I can't remember her last name right off the bat. But he had been talking to both of them and texting back and forth. And then after no one wanted the story, he came out with it and was quoting them on the text that they... Oh, one of the other things that the mother said was there were intimate videos made of she and George, and that when she got mad at him, she sent a picture to her little girl, who's 10, of that intimate video, which the police came out and it's in a report and said there was nothing they could use there. So she's getting all the points, the gun, the pedophilia that he had been accused of before, the child molestation. It's almost like she knew the point to hit. And as far as George being loving his celebrity, you've never seen George on but one interview, one time on Sean Hannity. That's the only time you've ever seen George even try to get on and tell his side of the story. He could have been paid to tell his story, and he never has.
Okay, hold on 1 second, Vicki. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And how come is it every woman that George Zimmerman is involved with accuses him of the same thing? I'm sorry. I think he's a nutwad. I think he's a loose cannon. And, yeah, the women that go with him are probably just as nutty and are seeing a dollar sign at the end of their last name. But he's not this innocent guy.
This is Cheryl. Can I interject one thing?
Yes.
I don't want you to misunderstand what I meant by celebrity. Celebrity doesn't mean TV. I mean celebrity by the way he's treated. When he shows up at places and people won't let him pay for dinner, or when he has a bodyguard or a driver or somebody's paying his rent or he's getting free clothes, that's what I mean by celebrity, the way he's treated around. Again, you've got police officers that aren't writing him up. You've got people that are offering him money to show up places. You know, they're making him out to be, you know, the poster for the Second Amendment. That is what I'm saying he's enjoying, and that's the example that I gave earlier. It's not whether or not he goes on Sean Hannity. It's whether or not he is enjoying the way he's treated about town. Again, you've got the Black Panther Party saying, we're going to kill this guy, we're going to kill this guy. He's not in hiding, and it's like I said, you know, over the summer, he was a mile when he was stopped for speeding, a mile from where the shooting occurred. This is not a man that's afraid. This is not a man that thinks any harm is coming to him. So that goes to his mental state. And again, I absolutely believe this woman knew what she was doing. And that's why I said, what woman would do this? One that is calculated. Just like the next woman that dates Chris Brown, or the next woman that wants to be with Tiger Woods, or the next woman that wants to try to marry O.J. Simpson in prison. They know damn well what they're doing. It's almost fame by proxy.
Amen. Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Vicki, let me give the address to your website. So you do have documentation of all of this up there. It's www.re, that's R-E, and then dash, not underscore, dash, renewsit.com. So that's re-newsit, N-E-W-S-I-T.com. So, Vicki, please don't think we're jumping all over you because we're not. I can honestly say, I've known you for years, and you are as honest as they come. What they read on your blog, I take as fact. I always have. You do research everything. You're obsessed with research. It scares me sometimes how obsessed with research you are. You go to places that are so unbelievable that I can't even begin to figure out how you got there. But don't you think George Zimmerman knows what he's doing too?
The thing about it is, you know, to say that every girlfriend he was with, we know people that they can't be alone, and they get with somebody else usually before they break up. When they usually get with a psycho, somebody that would go with somebody that quick. I don't know George Zimmerman. All I know is the minute, and it's so complicated. I mean, you'd have to read my blog to see the intricacies of it. But the minute he loses his gun, the whole suicide thing. There was a reporter that said something about his suicide before it ever came out the next morning, the night before. She was saying, oh, he's wanting to commit suicide, and they're going to put him on suicide watch, which they didn't, and they didn't know anything about until the next day during the hearing. Well, the suicide will get his guns taken away. Any kind of threat or perceived threat would get his guns taken away. And no sooner than his guns were taken away in the hearing, you can read on Twitter people saying, oh, the fat whatever doesn't have his guns anymore. Somebody needs to go get him now. I mean, at least I'm vulnerable. This man gets death threats. To say that he gets free dinners and free clothes, I mean, I talked to his brother, and it's not like that. And to say, you know, these are the kind of people like TMZ that will follow him and wait for him to come out at work. And it's very dangerous. I mean, he has no life. There's no life there. I feel bad only because of things like this woman telling him she was pregnant, which is something he's wanted all his life. And, I mean, it's like kicking someone when they're as down as they can possibly be. And to say he's enjoying any part of it, I can't even imagine that he has to have PTSD from just what he went through in the Trayvon case.
That's true. We have Kathy from Court Chatter. Kathy, are you just ready to bounce in here and jump in?
I have never, ever watched a more polarizing case unfold than Zimmerman. People want to kill him or treat him like a hero. I've never seen so many people divided over a case and so violently divided, so adamantly divided. It's crazy. I went through, from the time of his arrest to today, all kinds of opinions about it.
Mm-hmm.
I completely think the verdict was correct in the trial, which has not made me very popular on this one. But I just believe the way the law is written, and that I don't think he was shown. All right, I'll just leave it at that. I believe that verdict was correct. When it very first happened, when Trayvon was very first shot and the news broke, I said, oh, little guy, big gun, you know, he shouldn't be carrying guns. He doesn't know how to use them. My husband's an avid gun collector. We have lots of guns here. Everyone in my family shoots for sport, that kind of thing. And so I was angry when the story first broke. Then I got more angry as people went crazy about this case, just crazy. Nobody goes crazy about the hundreds of other cases that happen every single day, but this one really got them. And as more and more information came out, it wasn't just like he had stalked, hunted down, and wanted to murder a 17-year-old boy, which is exactly how everybody was reporting it. And I didn't like that. I didn't like that things were being made out to be not exactly what they were. So I waited for the trial, and in the end of the trial, I felt like that was the right verdict. Now, Do I like George Zimmerman? No. Does anyone? I mean, some people, you don't want to defend him, and I get that, and I have defended him. There are things I defended. Like, I don't want to make national news and hear national news about a speeding ticket he got. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
He can't
right.
do anything and go anywhere. So I get that. I don't know what to believe from Shelley or the girlfriend, because both of them are suspect to me anyway in all of this. What I do believe is he's in volatile relationships, whatever that means. Whether he's totally 100% the aggressor or it takes two to tango, he's, you know, my husband and I don't fight like that. So there's obviously a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe 100% either one of the women. Everyone in the media and everyone is ready to crucify him, and I get it. I get why. I totally get why. And so I, like Vicky, try and stay away from all that and just find facts. And the truth is, we don't know a lot of facts in either one of these incidences. We have he said, she said, and there's not a lot of facts. Everyone wants to say, you know, he was a murderer that got away with it, and now he's showing his true colors. Well, you know, I don't know that that's exactly true, but I do think he has problems. I do think that this had to have completely, totally affected his life, and I think we're seeing repercussions from that. Whether he has, I don't know, maybe he's got some PTSD. I don't even want to make excuses for him because, like I said, I don't like him, but I don't like the crucifixion that constantly goes on when it comes
right.
to him. Neither one of those women have clean hands in my eyes. So without being there in the room, we don't know. And neither time did the police have any guns or weapons. They don't know of any of them. They just had both women mentioning that because it's a very convenient thing to mention. It may have truly happened in both cases. He may have truly pulled a gun out on both of them. But there's no proof. There's no proof of that. And so anyway, I don't know. But what I found fascinating from my standpoint, because this is what I do, I'm a trial watcher and I'm a crime blogger, and this is what I do, is how this case has divided people
mm-hmm.
and cost friendships.
Yes.
And just, you see evilness come out on both sides. It's just, it's fascinating to me just to sit back and watch it all from a, trying to have a non-emotional aspect on it, of how this one particular case, this kind of thing happens all the time, but this one particular case has just created such animosity out there.
It really has. It really has. Our guest tonight, Cheryl McCollum, our good friend. We enjoyed her presence on the radio with us all last summer. She is amazing, from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. We also have Kathy from CourtChatter.com. We welcome V.L. Pate from www.re-newsit.com. And my wonderful friend, my official unofficial co-host in Minnesota, Michael. And Michael, you have a question and a comment.
Yes, I do. I just want to thank Vicky for pointing out the information that she has sleuthed about the girlfriend and her accusations and possible motivations. It's important that we all hear that. I want to comment to Cheryl's celebrity. I agree, he's got a celebrity sort of status. I think it's more of a notoriety than celebrity, but whatever you want to, however you want to call it, it's all semantics. And I want to affirm with Kathy, I think I truly am in the same category of, I just don't know that I care that much about George Zimmerman to like or dislike or one way or the other. And I also agree with Vicky that whatever life he is living will never be one where he doesn't have to look over his shoulder or have concerns. And I can't believe he's ever going to live a quality life after the Trayvon Martin trial, unless he moves somewhere where he's completely unknown. So, you know, a part of me sympathizes, a part of me doesn't care. I just remain quite indifferent to George Zimmerman.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael. Cheryl McCollum, Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. How long before you're back on the show and we're talking about another incident with George Zimmerman? What do you think?
Well, it depends on how this one plays out. But, you know, again, I give it not even a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's on everybody's radar. And here is, to me, the biggest issue that we are all facing. Everybody knows who he is. There's nowhere he can go. West Virginia, Wyoming, Oregon. They know him. Everybody knows him. He can shave his head and grow a beard. They're going to know him. So, again, you have to look at his behavior and his actions. He's not trying to hide. And I've said that since he made bail the first time. Mm-hmm. He ain't going anywhere. So why? Why does he not find, you know, some type of solitude in going to Nebraska? Why not go to North Dakota? Because he doesn't want to. He is right where he wants to be. And again, somebody is paying all his bills. He's not working.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
There's
That's a very good point.
He's got. I'm telling you. And you, in whatever you want to call it, I call it celebrity because to me, he's never had any attention like he gets. He gets attention everywhere. It's
uh-huh.
just like famous people. Lindsay Lohan, she gets a lot of negative attention, but it's still attention. Look at
right.
me, look at me, look at me. And again, nobody's harmed him. Nobody's harmed his brother. Nobody's harmed his mom or his dad. Yes, there are threats, and I believe some of them are extremely valid. My point is they feel very safe living in the same place in the same three-mile radius.
Mm-hmm.
They're not hiding, and there are certain things they're clearly enjoying. A driver and a bodyguard? Come on.
Cheryl, can
come
you
on.
Hang on with us? We're gonna talk about Michael Skakel here in just a few moments. Can you hang with us and talk about that? Because I want to talk a little bit about Nikki Sherman. Okay, great. Is that your final comment? I didn't mean to interrupt. Is that your final comment on George Zimmerman?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing else for us to say. None of us are big, huge fans. We believe
mm-hmm.
in the law. We thought the law was going to exonerate him based on the way it was. It did. We're done with him. For the love of Pete, move on.
And
he's not going to let us forget him.
And Vicki from RenewsIt.com, you'll have the last word on George Zimmerman.
Okay. Well, as far as it not harming his parents lost their retirement home. They lost everything. They have nothing. And just I want to make one real quick point about how the media has just beaten all of this into everyone's brain. The same thing is going on. And I'm not going to go into it, but just real quick. The Kendrick Johnson case, the boy that went into the cheerleader mats, and they're saying now
mm-hmm.
that it's murder. They're blaming and naming on the Internet two white boys that they're saying did this. They weren't even anywhere near. Even the mother says they're lying. It's not stopping the media. It's not
mm-hmm.
stopping the bloggers. You see it constantly. They know these kids' names now. Now these kids are looked at as they could have murdered this kid. I mean, and it takes on a life of its own. You know, what happened with George Zimmerman was to do with the standard round law and gun control. I mean, that's why it became so popular. It wasn't because he shot somebody in self-defense. So I just wanted to say that. I mean, it's a lot of what I hear is stuff that has just been subliminally put into our brains from the media.
Right. It has taken on a life of its own, absolutely. Well, we're going to change topics now, and we're going to talk about Michael Skakel. Michael Skakel was convicted in 2002 of killing Martha Moxley when he was 15 years old. Martha was 15 as well. This is a big case because it doesn't involve the Kennedys directly. The Skakels are Ethel Kennedy's, that's her brother and her brother's kids. So there is that kind of tenuous connection to the Kennedys, but they're not an actual Kennedy family, although they're often referred to as being one of the Kennedys. Mickey Sherman, we've had him on here several times. Great, I love him. I think he is a great guy. He went to prison for tax evasion, according to what I read. And since Michael Skakel has been granted a new trial, he was granted a new trial because they said Mickey Sherman didn't do his job. He was negligent and did all these horrible things, didn't do what he was supposed to do. There's accusations of him taking Michael's money and using it for himself rather than paying for experts. Just horrible things being said about Mickey Sherman. Mickey Sherman did have this to say, And this comes from, let's see, where does it come from? Oh, my gosh, I can't. Oh, the Greenwich Times, okay? He told the Greenwich Times, I have also been asked if I mind being thrown under the bus, and the bottom line is that this is about justice and whether Michael Skakel should have been sent to jail. And the answer is a very clear no. If my reputation suffers some collateral damage, so be it. He should never have been convicted. I represented Michael Skakel to the best of my ability, and there isn't a heck of a lot I would have changed had the case been redone, period. So he's basically saying, if you have to throw me under the bus, that's fine. But I did have him on the show once, and well, two times, or maybe even three. Anyway, every time I've had Mickey Sherman on the show here, I've tried to be very clever and sly and kind of sneak in Michael Skakel to get him to talk about it, and he refuses. He gets literally choked up. He can't talk about it. It's too emotional, and he said the reason he can't talk about it is because he is absolutely convinced, without any doubt whatsoever, that Michael Skakel is 100% innocent. Cheryl Cullum, I just made the assumption that you know Mickey Sherman. Do you know him very well?
I mean, we certainly have been around the same places more than once. And, you know, I like Mickey Sherman.
I do too.
There is absolutely nothing negative I can say about him or that I would say about him. But he has never been anything but, you know, a stand-up guy to me. Very polite, very knowledgeable, very intelligent, funny. You know, and here's the thing. When something like this happens, and again, it's a energy-filled case, and everybody knows about it, and all of a sudden the detective from O.J. Simpson is going to solve this case, and, you know, it's crazy. It's like all of a sudden you're like, what? You know, how is he working on this, and how is it finally going to get solved? And then there was all the hoopla about whether they were going to charge him as an adult or a juvenile. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, right. Well, don't you think he should have? Shouldn't he have been charged as a juvenile?
Yeah, still think he should have been tried as a juvenile.
But that's what I'm saying. It was one of those things where you're just like, wait a minute, he does something as a juvenile, but then he's not, you know, put on trial to an adult, then that would look ridiculous in a juvenile court. And then they're like, well, even at the time, you know, we would have probably gone ahead and charged him as an adult because it was such a, you know, heinous crime. And, you know, just one of those things that everybody's going to look for, who can I put under the bus? And we've all seen it. I mean, we're all grown on this show. And your reputation is, you know, what do they say, only as good as the last 10 minutes. I mean, it can change just like that. The right person accuses you of something, the right person, you know, puts something out about you. And, you know, like Vicki said earlier, I mean, some of that, you cannot put the brakes on negativity, especially when people can't stand you. You know, and that's just really unfortunate. But especially with people that are associated with the Kennedys, or, you know, there's a lot of people that go after that family. I don't get that either. You know, they just won't leave people alone.
Well, it seems like in the Martha Moxley case, if we are to believe what Mark Furman has written and what other people have said about the case, the Skakels were given a deference by the police department, if you will. You know, they took their time to get a search warrant. It was just not handled well, if you believe what is written. That's why I wish Vicki would have been on this case back then. She would have been 15 too, but I'm telling you, she could have had it wrapped up in 30 seconds. Michael in Minnesota, co-host, what are your thoughts on the Michael Skakel case?
Well, you know, I didn't have a lot of feelings about the case until we did have Mickey Sherman on. I was on that night. And because of that, I went and looked up, because you had told me he had, you know, handled the defense. So that's when I really went back and read. And I have had numerous conversations with Beth Karras about the case. In fact, the last one was just today in preparation for this show. I said, can you say anything that will reinvigorate an interest in this case for me? Because I just don't know. And I had talked to Beth earlier. I had seen an Anderson Cooper spot where Robert Kennedy Jr. and Jeffrey Toobin got into a very heated discussion, because it's Robert F. Kennedy, or Robert Kennedy Jr.'s claim that at the time of the attack on Martha, there are 5 eyewitnesses or alibi, people who can alibi Michael Skakel's whereabouts. And so I mentioned that to Beth, and she said, oh, I'm very familiar with this evidence, and those 5 really, well, like she said, Robert would probably know the case better inside and out than any of us, but I didn't really think that, of them as being that credible. But as Beth and I were talking today, like she said, it's either Michael or Tommy. But then the next question is, what kind of sibling would allow your brother, if you know you are guilty of a crime, to sit in prison for a 20-year sentence for something you committed? I mean, that would take a set of kahunas that I can't even comprehend. Now, I don't like my brother, but I would certainly never let him sit in prison for something I did. So anyway, Beth's question was, do we think that they will even bother to retry Michael Skakel? I know it's on the schedule for 2014, but do you think there's a chance they may say he served 10 out of a 20-year sentence and he was a 15-year-old at the time, enough's enough? Or what does the esteemed panel think of all that?
You know what? Kathy from Court Chatter, I know, is her teeth are chattering because she's dying to talk about this because she knows every little morsel there is to know about this case. So, Kathy from CourtChatter.com, your thoughts on Michael Skakel. Did Tommy do it and he's letting his brother sit in prison? What's going on?
I think it's more likely that Littleton did it, the tutor. If you want to look at everything they have on everyone, Littleton looks more guilty than Tommy or Michael, and yet there's nothing on any of the 3 of them. So I can't say with a certainty that Michael Skakel is innocent, but I can say with a certainty that there's enough reasonable doubt here that this whole case should have never gone. Michael, out of the 3 prime suspects, is the least, in my opinion, knowing what we know about Tommy and Littleton. Littleton failed 5 lie detector tests about the night of the murder. 5.
Is that true? Is that true?
That
I mean, where
true.
Do you source that? Where do you source that?
Well, I'll show you. Well, I'll tell you.
Okay.
A lot of it, and you're right, because we need to make sure what the sources are. A lot of it's coming from Robert Kennedy Jr., but he is quoting people and naming people and naming
I love him.
The source. No, but naming the sources that gave the lie detector test. Then you can read the history of what happened really with Littleton's life after this and his wife that he met after the fact. He's an alcoholic. He's got mental problems. He's been committed into a psych ward for periods of time. There's been lots of things. He has violent criminal charges. The wife was recorded on a phone call with him saying, don't you remember you told me what happened that night? And then he supposedly admits finally that he was he was drunk, he blacked out, although the whole time he always told the cops he'd had 1 beer that whole day and night.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, I don't know that he did it either, but Michael is the least culpable of the 3, the least likely, in my opinion. First of all, he was scrawny. He was little and scrawny, 15-year-old. He was the smallest in his class, by all reports. And this was a violent, violent death that took a lot of power, I think. And Littleton was a large, burly man, 6 foot, 200 or something like that. He was living at the Skakel home.
Mm-hmm.
And he changed his story on multiple occasions about what he did that night. The very first time he was ever interviewed, he was just stayed in the master bedroom the whole night while all the kids had their friends over that night, and he doesn't know anything. You know, then from then it changed. And then one time, oh, no, I was downstairs, and I saw Michael and Tommy outside. And then another time is I heard something outside, and I went walking around. So that's that. Tommy was the last person to be with her 10 minutes before they say her death occurred. Now, during the trial, they got another expert up there to claim the death could have happened as late as 1:30 in the morning. But originally, they said the death occurred around 10:30 p.m. And Tommy was last with her at 9:50 p.m. So So Michael has five witnesses that say he was 20 minutes away at his cousin's house until he was 20.
Right.
So the whole thing to me, it goes from they did a one-man grand jury. I don't know what you guys know about grand juries, but that just really doesn't happen. And it was a judge. They had a judge be a one-man grand jury to indict him. And they have nothing on him. They really have nothing on him. So
excuse
me,
Kathy.
Kathy,
can I interrupt here? And we're talking with Kathy from CourtChatter.com about the Michael Skakel case. And you've brought up a name that has been brought up for many years, and that is the babysitter/tutor. What would the motive be for him to kill Martha? That's the thing. There is a jealousy thing happening, supposedly, between Tommy and Michael over Martha. What reason would this person, this other person, have to kill her?
Okay, so really, really no motive, right? So maybe he didn't kill her. My point is, what do they have on Tommy and Michael? But with Littleton, they now, this is like I'm saying, there's no proof coming out in court in this, because this is the thing that bothered me about the Littleton case. He was their prime suspect, and he remained. Now, Tommy was their prime suspect for a long time. Then they focused all their efforts on Littleton, and that is who they wanted to pin on this. They are since now supposedly looking at other murders in the places he's lived of girls. So it gets more complicated and more convoluted with this Littleton guy. So he supposedly had a thing about girls and pornography, and then tells the wife later on that he blacked out and may have done something. So I don't know. I don't know that he did. I don't know. The point is that there's no evidence that any of the three of them did it. The last person seen with her is Tommy. But the thing that bothers me about the Littleton case is there he's number one prime suspect. They're ready to pounce on him. And then, boom, they switch and they offer him complete immunity from any prosecution in this case to testify against Michael Skakel. So he can never, ever be charged with this.
No matter what. Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. We've been talking about the Skakel case, and it's always been back and forth. Was it Tommy or Michael, Tommy or Michael, that killed Martha Moxley? And now Kathy from Court Chatter has brought up the third name that has actually been around as much, but as long, I should say, but not quite as much, and that is it Ken Littleton? Is that who it is? I apologize. Kathy, is it Ken Littleton?
Yes.
Ken Littleton. Cheryl, what do you think about what Kathy has said?
Well, I think I could have listened to Kathy 20 more minutes. I was intrigued.
I know.
Myself.
Isn't she great?
She's
the best.
Yeah, she's very compelling. But, you know, I think the first thing that always goes through my mind as a, you know, cold case investigator myself is her mom. Can you imagine that it stays, you know, unsolved for so long, and then there's all these
You're
people,
right.
And then there's finally a trial so many years later, and now he's out. It's like, I can't imagine what she's going through. But again, part of me thinks, how in the world would a powerhouse like the Kennedys let the babysitter get away with it? It seems like they, if nothing else, the way we have been told they have worked in the past, why wouldn't they have almost gotten the alibis and all that so tight for Michael Skakel? And you know what I'm saying? I find that extraordinary that they would have insulated them. Oh,
yeah,
Lord,
go ahead,
please.
Kathy.
Yes.
Kathy,
no,
go
I
ahead.
Just want to. I know. I'm a monopolizer of time.
No, that's okay.
Look, we've talked about Mickey Sherman, and I actually agree that he's a fantastic attorney. And I have seen him and listened to him, and also a very likable guy, all of that. But he didn't put up the fact that Tommy or Littleton could have done this crime. And that is part of the judge's ruling on ineffective counsel, is he did not adequately present that there's two other people here. A third-party culpability is how the judge ruled it. It says, failure to adequately present the alibi, failure to assert a third-party culpability claim against Tommy Skakel, and failure to adequately impeach Coleman. And Coleman is a witness to Michael Dean at the cousin's house that night. So those are her three reasons for ineffective counsel. Those are the biggest. Come on. You know, so you say, why didn't the Kennedys go at him, you know, have it all tightened up? But I think there was a problem in representation here.
No, no, you're misunderstanding. I mean, before Nikki was ever involved. I mean, from day one, minute one, their general playbook has been you circle the wagons, you talk to no one. I can't believe they would allow the babysitter to take 5 polygraphs. Yeah. It seems like he would have been on spring break in Mexico the next day. Get him out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like
fired.
To me, I understand. I'm saying, in my mind, it seems like they would have taken a page out of Chappaquiddick, if you follow me, to say, look, nobody talks. Nobody's doing this. Everybody gets an attorney. I'm sorry for her mom. I'm sorry for her. It's got nothing to do with us. She was at the party. She left. That's all we know. And boom, we're finished. I'm saying I don't understand 5 polygraphs, frankly, from anybody. And I don't understand how Skakel would not have had 15 friends say, nope, he was with us the whole time. He never left the house. That almost seems like the logical move the minute you know this girl is missing, the minute her body's found, the minute police are swarming everywhere, that would have occurred long before there was ever an arrest, much less a trial. Does that make sense, what I'm saying to you?
Yes.
It absolutely does. Michael in Minnesota, my wonderful co-host, thoughts, comments,
yes,
questions? What are your thoughts?
Well, from what I've understood, and this is from Inside Scoop, the Kennedys are totally upset with Mickey Sherman because of the things that Kathy cited as the reason for ineffective counsel. And there are also reports that, and I can't reveal my full source for this, and I'm sorry, but Mickey Sherman was found to have misappropriated funds that the Kennedys paid for the defense for personal use. And apparently that was part of what the, I was made to understand that was also included in the charges that Trisha, you thought was just tax evasion, but maybe that's not correct, but anyway, all I know is this Littleton person, the thought of him being granted immunity for testifying, it seems like once prosecutors get someone in their crosshair, they just don't care about really seeking the truth. At that point, the conviction is more important than seeking the truth. Now, Kathy, how old was Littleton at the time of Moxley's death? Do we know that?
I think 23.
And Moxley, was she also 15?
Yes.
So 23 and 15, I don't know. I can easily see where a 23-year-old could have had the hots for a 15-year-old, and unwelcome advances could have enraged a 23-year-old to the point of committing.
Mm-hmm.
I can easily see that as a possible motive. And his behavior after the fact, you don't just fall apart if you have a clean conscience, as he's appeared to do. So
totally.
I'm thank you. I think Littleton should move to the very top of the list.
Well, the point is, that's the point. No one really knows. But out of the three, Michael would have the least suspicion.
Yeah, right. I hear you. You made a very compelling case.
Absolutely. So, Kathy from courtchatter.com and Cheryl McCollum, let me ask you this. Do you think, and I'll start with Cheryl first, do you think it was Mark Furman's book that pushed all of this pressure onto the prosecutor? I kind of think, and I could be wrong here, but I get the feeling Mark Furman thinks he's the one who did it all. What do you think, Cheryl McCollum?
I think that Mark Furman had a reason to want to get back into good graces because his reputation was so damaged by O.J. Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
That's first, in my opinion. And second, and I would have to defer to Kathy on this because I just do not remember,
was it an election year for the DA? Because there would not have been, I mean, there wouldn't have been a better case than to try to go, quote, after the Kennedys. Because, again, whether it's Skakel or not, we all think Kennedy family. And, again,
right.
There's as many people that want to see them fall as people that still, you know, love and adore them. And it's one of those things. I mean, it's just, you know, people that...
I believe that came up in that Robert interview, or the match between Robert Kennedy Jr. and Jeffrey Toobin. I don't
right.
know what else to call it. It was really hot, so it got crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And Kathy,
sure.
from Court Chatter, do you think it Mark Furman was the one who put the pressure on the prosecutor, or was it an election year? What do you think happened all of a sudden?
It was definitely a tag team between Dominic Gunn and Mark Furman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Dominic Gunn is the driving force here. And I don't have mm-hmm. – I totally like the guy, love to watch all his shows, read his articles, all that. I don't have feelings one way or the other. But most certainly – he is the driving force for Michael Skakel being arrested. And he brought Mark Furman into it. And he had Mark Furman mm-hmm. investigate it and write the book. And that's what brought it all back up 25 years later. So I think for sure Mark Furman, but definitely Dominic Gunn.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cheryl McCollum, what do you think of that?
Oh, I mean, I don't think there's any question. And I'm
mm-hmm.
saying... You know, Mark Furman had nothing to lose and everything
right.
to gain.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, all of us sat around going, who? Who's investigating this? I mean, I was intrigued. Everybody's intrigued that after he has such a fall from grace and then he's going to come and he's going to have such a successful investigation and we're going to see it, you know, all the way through to trial and a conviction. I mean, that was, you know, our idea of a Super Bowl. No question.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal.
Boy. So
what's
next?
There was rehabilitation at its finest, for sure. But don't you think a lot of his Mark Furman's fall from grace was strictly a result of the slick defense put on by Johnny Cochran in defense?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Honey, let me tell you, I love you dearly, but his fall from grace came because he lied. All he had to do was admit what he did and, you know, say, hey, I'm not proud of it. But, yeah, I've used the N-word.
Right.
How on earth are you going to sit there and swear to God you've never used the word and then have them go, hey, is this you on tape 27 times using the word? Seriously? I mean, that's ridiculous. If you ask me right now, have you ever cheated on your husband? Absolutely not. If I know 47 people are fixing to call your show going, hey, I've had sex with her. Hey, I've had an affair with her. Then I'm an idiot. And you cannot do not answer one call. But listen to me.
I won't.
The phone lines are light up. But that's on me if I do that. That is
mm-hmm.
totally on me if I'm going to sit there and claim that's never happened when I know bloody well it has.
I'm sorry,
and
I forgot that.
My husband's sitting here laughing. I mean, he's
yeah.
cracking up. He's like, really? That was the only example you could think of? But yeah.
That was a good one. That was a very good one.
Crazy, sugar.
Well, we're going to move on to a different story here, but I just want to wrap up the Michael Skakel. So what are we waiting for now? Kathy from courtchatter.com, are we waiting for the prosecutor or the judge or somebody to decide who goes forward with this prosecution, and will there be a prosecution?
Well, we're waiting. The prosecutor is going to appeal the judge's decision of ineffective counsel and new trial. So we'll do that first. Then after that appeal process, depending on how that swings out, then, you know, they have to decide whether to try him again. I would seriously doubt we ever see Michael Skakel being tried again for this. But, you know, I could be wrong. There could be a real drive to get him again, but I would doubt it. I'm with what Michael said earlier about he's already been there 10 years, you know, of a 20-year sentence. He was 15 at the time. I just don't know how much money they want to put into this, but they said they are going to appeal the judge's decision for a new trial.
Yeah, and I don't think the judge will be overturned on this. I can't imagine that he would be, but then again, stranger things have happened. Cheryl McCollum, can you still stay with us? We still have a couple of other things to talk about. Cheryl?
I actually have got to go.
Okay.
I hate it.
After you...
But I'll tell you what I would love to do. I would love to talk to Vicki and Kathy again. I've enjoyed myself listening to them. I've got to get back at it.
We will have the three of you on, and Michael and I will sit back, and you guys can just go for it. That'll be wonderful.
I was going to say thanks a lot, Cheryl.
I got to leave you wanting more. But y'all have a lovely Thanksgiving, and y'all be safe.
Thanks,
you
Cheryl.
Too, Cheryl.
Take care now.
Cheryl.
Bye-bye. Oh, boy. We love Cheryl. I love the example she gave about sleeping with other people. That was just too funny. Okay, now, Michael, we're going to go to you in just a little bit. You're going to update us on the story about the service dogs that the families had purchased, and none of them had been trained. We have some new information about that. But I want to go to Vicki first, and Vicki has her incredible blog, and it is newsit.com. And Vicki, there's one story, and it is so awful and horrible, but we have to talk about it. And you've been looking into it. That is the rape and murder of Colleen, is it Reitzer or Ritzer? I'm not sure. She was a beloved teacher. And the shocking thing that happened was it was a 14-year-old student, Philip Chisholm, that did it. What can you tell us the latest on this story, Vicki?
Well, I'm not sure that I don't watch or listen to the news, so I'm not sure if this is the latest for people to do. But last night I was reading that they found, and this just came out, where they found out that she had been brutally raped with an object, and the detective said that it was so detestable they couldn't even talk about it. I mean, they couldn't even put it out. And then they found a note beside her body, which this is new to me, that said, "I hate you all."
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about this is, I don't know, again, who knows about this, but, you know, someone like this kid, there's a background of something. There has to be, you know, they moved from Tennessee recently, and so all the kids that you see saying, oh, he was a good kid, he was shy, he smiled all the time, whatever, they've only known him about 3 or 4 months. And so I just kind of went to try to find some background, and there's not a lot, I haven't worked a lot on it. But in the divorce papers, when he was 2, the judge put in, let me find it, they said that he had been abusive, sexually abusive, and mentally abusive, and
Hold on. You said he was 2 and he had been abusive, or you mean abused?
No, the father in the divorce.
Didn't say anything about the father. Okay, let's back up. You're talking about Philip Chisholm's father. This is from some divorce papers. It said the father had been sexually abusive and physically abusive, right?
Physically and mentally abusive.
Okay.
Now, so, I mean, to me, that's kind of probably has something to do with why he is so calm, cool, and collected, because they're saying that he hasn't given a motive. They don't know what his motive is, but he admitted to every single thing he did in detail, but he just won't give a motive. He won't say why. And with the exception of the note, you know, I hate you all. I don't know what that means or who he's talking to, but again, he left it there. And I thought something else that was really kind of chilling, and as an aside to this, is the tapes from the school, the CCTV tapes, show one of the students going into the bathroom after he was already in there, and she saw someone behind, and she said she walked out real quick because she thought someone was changing clothes. And I just thought that was... For her,
she thought someone was what? I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
Changing their clothes.
He was in there, right? Philip Chisholm was in there.
Yeah, he was in there. Yeah, he was in there. And she just said she saw the back of them, and they had no pants on, and she thought they were changing clothes in the girls' bathroom. So
she walked in on somebody who possibly had just killed somebody, and she may have been next, but she got out of there.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Well, and just the thought that maybe she could have called somebody or done something. She didn't think a lot of it.
I wouldn't, I would just think who would? Kathy from Court Chatter, have you been following this case at all?
not nearly as closely as Vicki has. I've just read and seen a couple of things about it, and it's horrific.
It is, and it's captured everybody's attention because of the horrificness of it. And again, this just goes back to something that I've talked about since day one on this show, and that is, you know, if we want to stop creating monsters like this 14-year-old boy, we have to stop the child abuse. And yes, sexual abuse is horrible. Yes, physical abuse is horrible. But let me tell you, screaming and yelling and mental abuse can mess up a person just as much. So that is my biggest crusade here, is we have got to stop the cycle of abuse, because if it had been stopped, then this teacher would still be alive. Colleen would still be alive and teaching her students. But because it wasn't, because somehow this boy was allowed to be abused in some way, and it's the abuse excuse. I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm saying it's a reason. He needs to be locked up for life. He can never go out. He cannot be among us ever again, because he is too damaged. And we need to protect ourselves from people like that. So anyway, Vicki, you'll keep following this for us, right?
Yeah, let me say just one more thing about what you just said. You said something interesting to me. We talked about this one time before, that when you ignore someone, it's the worst.
Yes.
When you ignore your kids, or you ignore even, this is ignoring bad behavior, but I just want to tell you one thing about the uncle. This is part of the problem. When they asked the uncle about him, he said he could have been upset. Teenagers go through that. He's 14. He's growing up still. That's the only thing I can imagine. I can't imagine anything else, because he's a storybook kid, a perfect family. Well, that's a lot, you know, but it's giving him an excuse, like a kid could just suddenly have this outburst and have been fine. It doesn't do anyone any good. We don't learn anything from that if they give excuses. You know, I can understand there was abuse, but let's say that is what it was. So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. And let me just tell you,
Patricia, before you let Vicki go, I wanna know if there's anything new on the case where the man shot the woman on his porch through the door that you reported on in Detroit, was it, or Chicago?
It was in Detroit. It was at Dearborn, outside of Detroit. No, there hasn't been anything new since they arrested him, and then he's been out on bond. The family's being very, very quiet, because I think Kim Worthy is the DA there, and she's pretty strong. And I can imagine her saying, I don't want any of this in the media, make it stop. And they pretty much have.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, now we're just waiting to see.
Yeah.
Charges have been filed. Just a quick backup story here. This woman was acting, this young girl was acting strangely. She was drunk. She crashed her car. She walked a long way. She showed up on a guy's porch. He shot her. His claim is that she was trying to get in and was acting crazy, and he was scared. And, of course, the family is saying no, she was just probably in trouble. And he has been charged. What has he been charged with, Vicki?
He's been charged with murder in the second degree.
That's pretty tough. So we're going to be watching that case as well. But I do want to say something that you said about ignoring. And I've told this story before, so please forgive me if you've heard it. But I had an incredible psychologist in my life for many years. He was an amazing man, is an amazing man. And I asked him, I said, what's the worst form of abuse that you have to deal with? And he said, you know, sexual abuse is horrible. It's terrible. People are so damaged. He said, physical abuse, same thing. He said, yelling and screaming and the mental teardown is awful. He said, but when a child is completely and totally and utterly ignored, that's the hardest one to treat, because it leaves their little minds. Their minds are still growing, and they have to do all these mental gymnastics. Why isn't mommy and daddy showing me love? Why aren't they talking to me? And they have to create all these things in their mind. And it really literally twists their little mind into a knot and kills their subconscious to the point where they can't function as an adult. You know, And doesn't that, when you think about it, doesn't that make sense? So
I've heard that because from children that have been raised in the Soviet,
in the
orphanages,
in the orphanages,
never been held or nurtured. they come out and they're soulless. They don't. They've never formed any attachment to a human being, and they absolutely don't know the first thing about bonding or attachment. And it's not something at a later stage in life that can be taught. Once it's not what it should be on an instinctual level or something, and if it's lacking,
not.
Then there's no way to insert it.
By that time, your frontal lobes, which handle all that part of your brain, you can't. You're right, Michael. You can't insert it. It needs to be developed. So if a person is being abused in any other way, as horrible as it is, they can still form attachments. But if you are totally ignored as a child, it can really, really mess you up. And hopefully someday I'll be able to do more shows on each of these topics. But we're going to turn now to another story that is sad but is starting to look like it has a happy ending. And Michael in Minnesota has really taken the lead on this. There was a company that sold service dogs for $10,000 a piece to help kids with, you know, the family would buy them, the child had autism, things like that. Find out the dog's not even trained, not even potty trained. Michael, why don't you jump in and give us a little background and tell us what the latest is?
Well, good news. The family here locally, the Walraths, took their dog, Bella. A local trainer was brought on to assess Bella. Bella is the name of their $10,000 dog that wasn't potty trained or anything. And they are offered to do all the training of Bella. They don't think it's too late. They assessed her and said they think they can work with her and make her a good service dog for Andrew, the son, with autism.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just hopeful for a good outcome. I'm a little pessimistic because I rescued a very damaged dog, and much like Bella, like I said in the initial report, all of the dogs from Compassionate Paws showed signs of abuse, especially around men. And for me to break through the abuse that Vincent had suffered, it took a solid year for him to, it was almost a year to the day before he approached me and kissed me.
And that's
so
your
I
dog.
Knew that's my dog, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so to break through that barrier of having been beaten or abused, and also try to train when they've already developed bad habits, I just don't know. But it looks hopeful at this time, so our fingers are crossed that Bella will at least be trainable and trained. Mm-hmm.
Do we know anything about any charges being filed against Compassionate Paws? Because obviously it's not just Bella, the dog, that this happened to, that family. It's a bunch of families that it happened to. Do you know if anybody is pressing charges or what's happening in that area?
So far, charges have not been filed that I have seen, and I follow the case. I Google it every day to see if there's anything in the news about it. But there is a class action suit against Compassionate Paws with 8 families adjoined, and they didn't want to include any of the other families. The Walraths did have their attorney pen a letter that essentially points out absolutely everything that Compassionate Paws did or did not do with their dog, Bella. I do have a copy of that letter, and I can send it to anyone if they're interested in reading it. But it's Compassionate Paws is the name I'm saying, Vicki.
Mm-hmm. Compassionate Paws. Oh, wow. That's
right.
The name of the family that that took one of the dogs.
And
the Walraths.
Walraths is the name of the family that adopted
mm-hmm.
the dog locally in St. Paul. But anyway, so when asked, they had appeared on Beth's radio show, the Walrath, Jenny Walrath, to talk
mm-hmm.
about this. And Beth had asked her if they were going to pursue a legal case against Compassionate Paws. And they really want first of all, they said they couldn't afford it, and I let them know I would cover their legal fees if they wanted to do that. But they want to focus on just getting a dog to help their son, Andrew. That's got to be their first focus.
Sure.
So, but there is the class action, and like I did report initially, the Attorney General's office is investigating the case.
And let's keep our fingers crossed that something is done, because that is pure evil to take advantage of families with kids that are handicapped, and you sell them a dog that doesn't even know how to go outside and go potty, let alone how to work with a child who has special needs. Michael, thank you. You are an angel for helping all of those families. Like I always say, you wake up and you think, who can I help today? That's how your day goes, Michael, and I love you for it and appreciate it. Kathy from CourtChatter.com, what is going on with your blog, my dear? Give us the scoop and wrap it up for us.
Well, my blog is doing fantastic. I'm having a great time. And I just recently joined with Whoop TV, which is where I watch all my trials online. They do live streaming of trials. And we have created a new forum. So we have a forum where you can find out all the latest crime news, the latest arrests, the latest updates on the trials. All of my blogs feed into that forum as well. And you can get to that through my courtchatter.com. There's a link to the forum in there. And life is good.
That is wonderful to hear. And Vicki will give you the last word. What's going on at www.re-newsit.com? What's happening on your blog?
Just the latest tapes. I dig where no one else will go.
That is true. You do dig where no one else will go. That's the truth. Michael, we'll see you next week. Everybody have a lovely and wonderful and very, very safe Thanksgiving.
Before you get rid of me here. Anyone, I know that Vicki has been looking for she was interested in the name Walrats or whatever. The link for the local radio show that aired here that I initially saw, I'm going to put right in the, there it is.
In the chat?
In the chat. So anybody who wants to watch the piece that I saw that got me so hot under the collar, go watch it. It's only a 7-minute piece. It'll infuriate you, and you'll see Jenny Walraff and her husband and their son Andrew. So
absolutely.
Grab that link if you want to watch it.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. And again, everybody have a very, very safe Thanksgiving, but we do need to leave you with the legal goo. It's legal holiday goo now. The opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely different and separate entity from websleuths.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. So if you get your true crime brains all boiling mad, you don't go on the forums and blame the forums. You come to me, moi, Trisha, and I'll lower your temperature, I promise. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.